Thank you, Jerry, and thank you very much for your meditation this morning, bringing us together to remember and honor our connections, grounding us and helping us be aware of all that. So it's a good way to start out. I'm Lauren, and I'm going to be summing up our month of looking at relationships with the Dharma lens. We are social beings, and our time on the cushion provides a refuge in seclusion, helping us to develop calm and clarity. It's a time to collect ourselves, collect our minds, and to focus. But as Sue said last week, we also need to take our understandings from the cushion to the less controlled, muddy waters of our daily life and human interactions. The Dharma path is meant to transform how we live in every moment, in all situations, and that definitely includes relationships. I'm going to describe some practices that might help us continue observing in the days ahead, how we relate to others, and help us discern what contributes to awakening for ourselves and others, and what decreases suffering. As we say every morning in our community statement, freeing our minds of greed, hatred, and delusion through this practice offers the opportunity for others to do the same and reduces ignorance and hatred in the world. And I really believe in that. I wasn't one of the people who created this community statement, but I love hearing it every Sunday. And every time I hear that, I think, yes, what we're doing here, just in whatever practice we have, does flow out and affect other people. I'm going to start with a poem called We Are of a Tribe by Alberto Rios. We plant seeds in the ground and dreams in the sky. We are of a tribe. We plant seeds in the ground and dreams in the sky, hoping that someday the roots of one will meet the upstretched limbs of the other. It has not happened yet. We share the sky, all of us, the whole world. Together, we are a tribe of eyes that look upward, even as we stand on uncertain ground. The earth beneath us moves, quiet and wild, its boundaries sifting, its muscles wavering. The dream of sky is indifferent to all this, impervious to borders, fences, reservations. The sky is our common home, the place we all live. There we are in the world together. The dream of sky requires no passport. Blue will not be fenced. Blue will not be a crime. Look up. Stay a while. Let your breathing slow. Know that you always have a home here. Tweri started out the month, with a video that focused on the fact that human beings have a basic need to connect and belong in community. The video that Tweri used to introduce the topic of relationships, some of you may not have seen it, some of you did. It showed a deaf mother and her baby bonding with obvious love and wordlessly through touch and facial expression. When I watched that, there was no doubt here's a relationship leading toward awakening, away from suffering. Thank you for that image, Tweri. This was a good way to start reflecting on relationships, remembering how precious my connection and our connection is to other human beings, animals too. all sentient beings, really. I would like to invite all of us right now just to take a moment to look for an image in your mind or a feeling in your body that to you expresses a relationship that you aspire to, that you're grateful for, that leads towards awakening and away from suffering. So I'm just going to pause for a few seconds and just have each of us get in touch with the connection that is nurturing and forward leading. That's a personal connection. It's something we can hold on to when we wade out into the muddy waters of our lives, no matter where our daily life takes us. We can keep in mind our aspirations and values. And it's a way of connecting with the Buddha's Eightfold Path, which starts with wise view and wise intention. The Buddha gave us the Eightfold Path to help us move out of suffering and navigate our daily life and develop our wisdom and compassion. One teacher at a retreat I went to recently said, when we consider ways to practice and we find ourselves in a situation where we aren't sure what to do, have the Four Noble Truths in your pocket. Wise view and wise intention are the first two folds of the Eightfold Path, and they help us remember our values and aspirations. We need to remember where the path is pointing. As we learn from our more peaceful relationships that nurture and support us, as well as from those relationships that seem to challenge our peace and trigger our sorrow and conflict in us, we can orient ourselves with the help of our deepest values. It doesn't matter if you don't remember the exact words from the suttas defining wise view and wise intention. The Buddha's words just point, but our heart knows what's true and right. And so as a practice, I think it's always good to keep reconnecting with yourself and the way you envision the path. Lindell reminded us to also be aware of feeling tone in the Vedanas in relationships. I know when I first heard of the Vedanas, I just found them very awkward and hard to deal with and hard to find even. And I think that's because they're so subconscious, you know, they're often out of our awareness. But all humans are alike in that feeling tones of pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral are part of our moment-to-moment experience. They enter into our preferences, our expectations, projections, and prejudices in relationships. And it's such an automatic habitual process that we may not be aware of their influence, and we can be blindsided after the fact. Remembering that this Vedana process is the second foundation of mindfulness and one of the five aggregates of clinging is important. The Buddha was calling our attention to the importance of being aware of Vedana. And it seems that it would be very helpful to spend time in our formal practice being aware of pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral feelings, and also continue noting pleasant, unpleasant, and investigating them in our daily life. Remembering that feeling tones are impermanent, yet we have a tendency to cling to them and identify with them. This can lead to a lot of selfing and othering. once you start seeing feeling tone more, you can see if you can be more flexible because they are impermanent. And maybe they are aspects of clinging. So maybe you can, we can, let go of our grip a little bit. Unpleasant, wanting, 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 unpleasant, don't want, don't want, don't want. Or just the ability to be still with a neutral feeling tone long enough to look deeper and see if it holds some surprise that you didn't expect or I didn't expect. Can we see through the narrowness and distortion that feeling tones often give to a situation or a human being and see through to the truth of our connection and oneness? A saying that I found helpful in relationships for loosening my expectations and judgments of others comes from a 12-step program that I know, and it's the phrase is, take what you like and leave the rest. Many times saying that phrase to myself has opened my stance towards someone or something long enough for me to discover that I wouldn't, more aspects to that situation or person that I would never have been able to appreciate if I had remained attached to my initial impression, which is also a prejudice and black and white thinking. So feeling tones, being aware of them, trying to loosen our grip around them can open us up to more relationships and wiser relating. I think the excerpts from Lyndall's poems that she shared stress this. And the first one was Rumi's. He says, there is a community of the spirit. Why do you stay in prison when the door is so wide open? Move outside the tangle of fear thinking. So keeping in mind, are we in a prison in any way? Can we open the door a little wider? Are we in a tangle of fear thinking in this situation? And the other poem was from Ibn al-Arabi. There was a time I would reject those who were not of my faith. I think we also can say politics. But now my heart has grown capable of taking on all forms. Whichever the route love's caravan shall take, that shall be my path. I wanted to read that poem one more time because I enjoyed it so much when Lyndall shared it in her talk. So now we come to Sue's last week. Sue's talked about the relationships that can be messy and complicated by our desire to satisfy our wants, needs, and expectations. And also relationships that can be the source of growing beyond these self-motivated desires that can bring out in the open the stuck areas that need to be examined and transformed in ourselves. Also, relationships nurture the heart and move us to go beyond ourselves, to let go of defenses and respond with love and generosity to another human being. As Sue said, I really like this too. Relationships are an exquisite opportunity for growing our wisdom and generosity, for thinning the self, and for seeing and accepting our own humanness and the humanness of the other. So Sue suggested a practice in her talk last week, and I really thought this was a good one, and so I'm going to reshare her practice. She reminded us that when we find ourselves caught up in a conflict with someone, maybe we're suddenly jolted awake in the middle of a story our mind has created, or maybe we're in a contentious conversation with someone, maybe we're getting ready for the attack or the defense. Whichever place we are, Sue's used an example of her own practice, which started with getting quiet and pausing before she took action and asking the question, what is really going on here? What am I clinging to, pushing away, distorting, denying? What am I believing that might not be true? I really find that question very helpful. And then she said, listen to what your thinking mind is telling you. You can also add, is that so? Listen to what your heart is telling you, and listen to what the other is. Is telling you, which brings me to some suggestions about communicating, communication, and Sangha. This remind me a lot of the practices that focus on communication. And the first practice I thought of was Gregory Kramer's Insight Dialogue. He developed the insight dialogue process because he believes that the Dharma path doesn't have to be in isolation. In fact, he says mindfulness can be amplified when meditating with a spiritual friend. We can develop mindfulness with another person, actually meditate together. And I have belonged to several insight dialogue groups and have gone on a number of retreats to learn this practice, and I will say that it's been a wonderful opportunity. There are 6 guidelines that he proposes, and even though I don't have time to go into them, you can kind of imagine them as I say them, and just imagine if that, in your mind, the way you interpret it, sounds like something you do or something that you might aspire to do. So just like Sue's talked about, the first step is pause. Then relax. Then open. Then trust emergence. Listen deeply and speak the truth. I found this practice very transforming for me personally because I preferred to look at the truth of myself in private. I didn't really want to expose myself particularly. If you think of what you notice and are become aware of in meditation on the cushion silently, you know, you don't always want to. It can show a lot of your vulnerability because you're following the Dharma path, which includes not self, suffering, impermanence. And in Insight Dialogue, you share that. So as you're meditating, you share what your insight. However, it was very challenging to me. It really pushed me to my edges, which Tim always talks about we should do. But I really became, my practice became stronger and my faith in myself became stronger. So it's something worth investigating. And I think when we share in our breakout groups, we get a flavor of it too. So I wanted to just bring up Sangha and how important Sangha is. And that is a practice that can really help us in relationships. It can strengthen and nourish our Dharma path and carry over into all our relationships. And I wanted to say that Sims has Kalyana Mita spiritual friend groups, and some of you may know what those are and be in them, and some of you may not be, but we started some this year and we're going to start more in the next year, so that is something you might consider. And those are, you know, formal groups, but just exploring online, finding groups, just like you do here on Sundays. This is really important and to be valued as a practice. So I would like to say, in conclusion, it's about time to conclude. I think we all are, all of us here, are so appreciative of each other's wisdom that we hear in the breakout rooms. And we appreciate the opportunity to express our own newly discovered insights. As you are all, we are all listening deeply with kind and open minds to what we didn't know we were going to say. That's kind of the trust emergence step of insight dialogue. You don't really know and plan what you're going to share, but it comes out of your intuition, your heart, deeper layers of yourself. And that is something to value and continue and develop. In our community statement, we say we recognize our deep connection with one another, where each of us is welcome just as we are. So that's Sangha. That's the communication we can aspire to. And every time I hear that each Sunday, it makes me very happy. There's a mudita phrase in the metta practice that says, "How wonderful you are in your being. I am delighted you are here." And I think that's what happens when we come together in Sangha. And I'm saying that to all of you right now. There are some other communication methods that are promoted and taught by different Vipassana teachers. And I'm not going to go into them now because I don't have time, but I will just say Donald Rothberg talks about finding common ground and bringing empathy and compassion to our relationships with those who have views different from ours, and avoiding retreating into our own bubbles, holding our views lightly. He has some practice ideas for that, and I thought they were really good, but they would take a whole a whole focus. Orin J. Sofer and Marshall Rosenberg collaborate with nonviolent communication. Orin J. Sofer is a Dharma teacher. I don't think Marshall Rosenberg is, but they believe that language really shapes how we see other people. And they have, Orin J. Sofer talks about three foundations for mindful communication, which actually are all part of what Suze was talking about. Seek to understand, pause, pay attention to what's really going on here. So in conclusion, we are all a tribe. We are of a tribe. It reminds me of Tim's homework, Gateway to Oneness, the image of the sky in that poem. And it helps me remember, not I, not me, not mine, not two, not self, and the other. So I have talked about four relationship practices that you might take away. Make the Four Noble Truths and Eightfold Path personal and put it in your pocket. Practice on the cushion and off being aware of feeling tone and see if you can loosen the clinging a little bit. Take what you like and leave the rest. I'll just say that the Dalai Lama was asked why he was so popular, why he thought he was so popular. And he said he thought it was the fact that he can always find some good in another person, in another. Suze's five-step practice, what is really going on here? And cultivating communication and Sangha. So it's time for breakout. You can communicate and relate to your fellow Sangha people here. Maybe you'd like to discuss one of the practices that interests you and how it might help your relationships, or you probably have another practice that you're working with that you might like to share. So you'll have 20 minutes, and I'll put you into groups of three. and enjoy. So, welcome back, everyone. Would anyone like to share out something from your group or anything else? You can use the little hand in reactions or just wave. Oh, right here. Lillian, did you want to talk? Unmute yourself.
Thank you. Sorry, I was just putting my hair back here.
Oh, okay. Okay, Charlotte.
Charlotte?
Yes. The one thing that we were talking about was the habit of trying to fix something, and when somebody would tell you a problem or offer some information, and then try to say, well, if you did this or if you did that, or and how difficult that is to break, but how important it is to notice and refrain from doing, because oftentimes it's not really welcome.
Yeah, I think probably a lot of us share that. We know that we're listening, we're witnessing, we're listening deeply, but we probably have a little bit of advice like, well, you know, I've done that before and maybe this person could try this. But I think from my experience in the breakout groups, people hold that back, but you still have that. You can see how habitual it is and how, what a tendency it is. Yeah. So it's nice that we have guidelines to remind us that isn't the purpose, because people feel so much safer, I think, knowing that they're just being heard. They're not being fixed. Cheryl?
In our group, we talked, everybody, you know, we talked about a lot of stuff because relationships are so all-encompassing and there's so much there. And we talked about how the Dharma, you know, the practices that you were talking about, the insight dialogue and Aaron Sofer. And, one person's actually taking an Aaron Sofer class right now.
I did put the his book and name in the chat if anybody's interested. Go ahead.
How the Dharma has opened up our ability. I mean, it's true for me, and I heard it in, you know, with the others too, that opened up our ability to be able to relate even in difficult situations and, you know, places where we didn't, you know, I mean, where I know for me personally, I mean, if you had asked me to be in a particular situation and I was angry, I would say, I absolutely cannot talk to that person, but that's not true anymore. And, I don't know, there's just an opening. It's like there's more space in the room and there's more space around my beliefs about what's going on. And, you know, all that conditioning, I think, you know, as the Dharma works itself, you know, and as we do these practices of pausing and you know, it becomes more doing no harm.
Right.
Being kind, not getting in our own way.
Yeah.
Those three.
Yeah.
It's a wonderful practice. I just really appreciate being able to talk about it and just being able to experience how it all unfolds.
Yeah. Thank you, Cheryl.
May I have time for one more question, huh?
Yep. Come on, somebody. One last. Okay, great. Nikhil.
Yeah, I was mentioning this during our breakout group, but I think just something that came up for me was kind of the gratitude for the relationships from the Sunday sit and being able to talk with people that are, you know, trying to be self-reflective and trying to be kinder and, you know, just more introspective, you know, and it's, I think it's kind of a community that it's hard to find that kind of relationship or that kind of interaction with people outside of, you know, Sims has been my experience. And so, you know, just kind of gratitude for, you know, being able to talk with everyone here.
Yeah, I hear you, and it echoes my feeling too. And I could see some people nodding on the screen in the gallery. It really is nurturing and safe. And
yeah, I saw a lot of nods as well. It was, yeah, in my own head as well. So it's really true.
Yeah.
What do you think? Maybe.
Yeah, I think we can close now the discussion and move on to the closing. Jerry, if you'd like to do that. Thank you, everybody.